The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hi, this is Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with the Slate spoiler special podcast on Bridesmaids, the new film directed by Paul Feig and starring Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph. Here with me in the studio is Lindsay Robertson. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Dana.
So very happy to have you in on this one. Lindsay is a writer and a blogger who's about to launch a new blog, a new TV website called The Set. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you're writing it with Tara Ariano?
Yes.
Of Television Without Pity fame?
Yes. Extremely excited to be working with her.
Can you tell us when approximately the launch is going to happen?
Not sure. Probably this summer, though.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, we'll have you back in when it does. So I was really happy to have you on this one because I consider you my sort of girl movie go-to and one of my comedy go-tos. So this is sort of the big girl comedy, definitely of the summer, actually maybe of the last few years.
Yes.
And highly anticipated all year. So just your first reaction, what did you think?
I loved it. I'm really glad this is a spoiler podcast because normally I would just be really quiet. I'd just say, manage expectations, just see it. But, since you have already seen the movie, if you're listening to this, this is an important one to say that. I absolutely loved it and I'm really excited about it. And, I'm relieved too, because I think so much seemed to sort of depend on this movie. Like, and if it was a flop, well, it still could be a flop, I guess. But, it is, I believe it's very successful as an actual comedy.
And, well, when you say so much was riding on it, I know what you mean, but can you elaborate a little bit for the listener?
I guess it's one of the first movies where it's sort of for a female audience, from a female point of view that does not revolve around a romance or a love story. And it's, sort of about the other things in life. And yes, it's about a wedding, but they had to kind of start out. Maybe eventually they'll have movies with adventures that women go on that don't have anything to do with the man, but in this case it just seems like this movie is opening the door. And it's also, they're definitely doing a lot of PR spinning about that. This is that movie, this is the one, is it gonna work? If it doesn't, we're screwed forever. So
you mean in terms of other women getting projects to write movies like this? We should also point out that it is written by two women, by Kristen Wiig and by her writing partner, Annie Mumolo, who has a small part in the movie.
Yes.
So although it's not directed by a woman or produced, it is actually produced by Judd Apatow, which is another part of the big hype machine. It does feel to me more organically like a women's comedy than I had expected going in.
Right. And it's a comedy, not a romantic comedy, so.
Well, can we get into that? Okay, let's approach it from that angle, because I guess you could say it's not a romantic comedy. It does have an important romantic story in addition to the wedding story, right? We should specify that. Okay, so the character who's getting married is not the main character. Maya Rudolph plays the woman who's getting married. Her name's Lillian. Her best friend since childhood, whose name is Annie, is played by Kristen Wiig, and she would be the main character of the movie, right? So
yes.
It's the story of the maid of honor and the misadventures that she gets into on the way to planning this wedding for her best friend.
Yes, and we're seeing it all through the eyes of her and relating to her. And,
right, so we don't get that much screen time with Maya Rudolph, although I think she does a lot with her little bit of screen time that she gets.
Yeah, she does.
So as the movie begins, Maya Rudolph is proposed to by her boyfriend, who, interestingly, is practically invisible throughout the movie, right? I don't think he literally speaks a single line. The guy that plays her husband to be, right?
We know that he's blonde. We see him. He seems
standing
fine.
There smiling during an engagement party. And the question never becomes, should she or shouldn't she marry this guy, which I thought was interesting. I did think at some point that was going to come into play. And it's really immaterial to the movie, which is completely focused on these female friendships. So the other big female friendship in the movie is between Maya Rudolph and Rose Byrne, who plays this woman named Helen, who isn't initially chosen as the maid of honor, but is kind of clearly the competitor for the best friend title with Kristen Wiig, right?
Yes.
And so Helen is kind of hilariously perfect. She's really rich. She's married to some rich guy. She seems to be almost like a professional party planner, right? So everything that she does works out perfectly, and she plans these incredibly elaborate events for her friend. And poor Kristen Wiig is just kind of schlumping along, trying to do anything half right and can't do anything right.
Yes, and this wedding is basically happening at the absolute worst time in Annie's life. She's working as in a jewelry store after her awesome bakery business, Cake Baby, went under, and her dream has died. She lives with these two brother and sister roommates. They say they're British at one point. I thought they were Australian. They're strange. She drives this car that's breaking down, has no brake lights. Just her life is really miserable. And then this wonderful thing is happening to her friend, and she has to plan everything and be the maid of honor. And then here's Helen, who is just the opposite. She's perfect. She's rich. everything that Kristen Wiig isn't, and it just basically it's the movie. It's her just kind of gradually going crazy,
right?
And
you were saying
that
also that this movie belongs to a genre of normal people driven slowly crazy that you're fond of.
Yes, I love those for some reason. Just in this movie, it's really subtle because, you know, Helen really doesn't do anything specifically wrong except she's just perfect. And she does give her the pills and the bourbon on the plane.
Right. But, this is one of the big comic set pieces is that all the bridesmaids are flying to Vegas together for a bachelorette party, which Kristen Wiig didn't want to do in the first place because it was too expensive. She keeps trying also to save money on these events, and it always turns to her disadvantage. But she is an anxious flyer, Kristen Wiig's character, so she ends up getting 2 Valium from Helen. It's not clear whether it's a deliberate undermining or not, and then chugging a scotch on top of it. And there's this, I thought, hilarious, completely over-the-top scene where she just ignores all social boundaries and blunders up into front class and starts making a fuss.
Yeah, that entire scene was amazing. I love how long it went. I love how long all of the comedy scenes go. Like, they take it just so much farther than a romantic comedy would take it. They take it as far as it would go in an R-rated movie, you know, that Judd Apatow did for...
You're right. I mean, both take it as far in terms of kind of the extremeness of the joke, how raunchy it is or how kind of gross it is, but also just in terms of the sheer length. There's these long comic riffs where I just couldn't believe that Kristen Wiig was being given the chance to keep elaborating on a joke so extremely. Like okay, for example, the shower that Helen throws for Lillian is this really absurd over-the-top event with this Parisian theme where they're like puppies in berets and a fake Eiffel Tower and a chocolate fountain, all these over-the-top things at her huge mansion. Oh, and white horses pick you up at the gate and carry you to the party. Like, all those sight gags were really, really great. But then the Kristen Wiig character has this absolute freak out in that scene at the fact that Helen's gift is so much fancier and better received than hers. But there's something really beautiful in the character detail about the gift that she gives, right? I mean, you actually see in this scene, I think, that the two writers of the film are old friends. Kristen Wiig and Andy Mumolo have known each other for 8 years. They were in the Groundlings comedy troupe in L.A. together. And you really see that history of the friendship when she gives her this kind of decoupage box with little cutouts of pop music they used to listen to and things they used to do together when they were little girls. And it's this incredibly heartfelt but homemade and inexpensive gift, right? And then it's topped by this rich woman giving her tickets to Paris. And the freak out that occasions is just one of the golden moments of the movie, I think.
Where she just says, "Are you fucking kidding me?" You know, it's just amazing. And I love that she can say that. I love that it's R-rated and they're not trying to get little girls in to see a romance.
So the much talked about scene in this movie that's actually an incursion from Apatow and Feig, it sounds like it was something that they wanted put into the script that wasn't originally there, is the big set piece involving poop and vomit jokes. Do you want to set that up and talk about your reaction to it?
Yes. So as her contribution, I guess, to the day of the fitting for the bridesmaids' dresses, Annie, played by Kristen Wiig, takes everyone to a Brazilian restaurant that she's like, "This is where actual Brazilian people eat," and it, you know, they all eat,
and it's sort of a dump, of course.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. There's like a stray dog in the parking lot, I think, and so after that, they go to this incredibly fancy place to get the fitting done that Helen gets them into, even though there's a 7-week waiting list, and everybody starts to get all sweaty, and when they're trying on all the dresses and expensive dresses. And basically, like, everyone has sort of an either a vomit or diarrhea incident, except for Kristen Wiig and Helen. Sorry, Helen refuses to eat the Brazilian food because she doesn't want to get bloated during the fitting. So she's the only one who doesn't get sick. And there's this one scene that's just amazing where Kristen Wiig is obviously, like, needs to vomit, and she's standing there in the dress, and she just refuses to admit it. And each time they show her face, she's more and more green and more sweaty and more in total panic mode.
"You got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?"
"No, I had the same thing that she had, and I feel fine."
"Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, no.
What is happening?
Nothing's happening.
Oh, my God.
You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet."
"No, okay. No, not the bathroom. Everybody, go outside."
And there's this really ridiculous close-up where Helen offers her a Jordan almond, which is, of course, exactly what would be sitting around at a bridal fitting place, like a little cut glass dish of Jordan almonds, and forces her to eat the Jordan almond in close-up to prove that she wasn't affected by the food poisoning. I don't know if it comes across in recounting it, but it's so sadistic and ridiculous.
It's like a standoff, you know? It's like a pissing contest or something, like who can break first. I love it.
But did that scatological scene strike you as an incursion? When I read in the that profile of Kristen Wiig in the New York Times Magazine that, you know, that had been something that Apatow and Feig insisted be put in the movie, basically because it was going to make guys laugh and get guys into the theater, I thought, oh, no, is this movie going to feel like it's two different movies sutured awkwardly together? And I actually didn't really feel that it felt that way. I mean, that scene is a pretty extreme gross out, but there's some pretty funny stuff in it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of mercifully brief and without the sound effects that we've come to expect from, you know, Farrelly Brothers movies and stuff. Yeah, it's funny. It works. And also it works, you know, later in the plot. It's like, oh, you know, Annie can't do anything right. You know, it doesn't matter what she does. Everybody gets food poisoning because of the restaurant.
Right. So it doesn't just feel like a sketch. Well, this is what I was saying coming out of the movie to you, is that I had sort of thought that at most this would be an effective set of sketches that were thinly knit together by a plot. But it actually did feel like a real story that built on characters and advanced the plot. All right, well, this movie is completely and entirely dependent on the performance of that character of Annie, and I want to hear you on Kristen Wiig. I don't watch Saturday Night Live that much. I've seen her in sketches here and there. You know, I've seen her in small parts in movies. I thought she was funny, but I think I've probably thought she was sort of a one-note actor before who just always does the freak show person. But I thought she was absolutely brilliant in this role. It made me really excited for her to have more leading roles in comedies.
Yeah, I feel like seriously, not kidding. I feel like they should do an Oscar campaign for her for this movie, like for Best Actress. I think she was just, and also I'm not a huge Kristen Wiig fan from SNL. I mean, I know she's one of those people where it's like, I know she's talented, but characters like Gilly just get on my nerves a lot.
Is that the happy person at Target character she does on
SNL? No, it's this other sort of weird little girl character. She just does some stuff that's just like, okay, I get it. That takes a lot of talent, but it doesn't make me laugh. But after this movie, I mean, she was just so incredibly relatable. She wasn't a wacky character. She was just sort of like a normal person who was sort of being made to feel weird by all these situations.
Well, it's a real Shaggy Dog story. It's one of those things where it's sort of the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, right? Which starts right at the beginning with a really funny sight gag. I love that that gate sight gag at the beginning. So we first see her in this big fancy house, which turns out to belong to a character played by John Hamm, who's sort of a Don Draper-like character, actually, who's basically, all we know about him is that he's some sort of good time playboy fuck buddy guy that she occasionally has sex with, right?
Yes.
So we see the two of them having this really,
like,
hilariously sort of athletically comic yet bad sex. And then he basically kicks her out. There's a really heartbreaking yet funny line where they're kind of having pillow talk after spending the night together. And he says, you know, I really, really want you to leave right now, but I just don't know how to say it without hurting your feelings, and basically kicks her out of his house.
Yeah.
So she tries to leave, and there's a big automatic gate that she can't get open. And of course, it's too humiliating to go back and say, can you please open your gate so that I can leave your house? And so she climbs the gate, but as she climbs it, it starts to open. I can't really describe it, but she's kind of riding this gate like rodeo cowboy style while all the neighbors watch. And it's just such a humiliating beginning to the movie. It tells you so much about this character and how much she's willing to put up with and sort of what a passive character she is. And that leads me to something else I wanted to say that I liked about this movie, which is that she's not at all, as relatable as she is, she's not at all a whitewashed main character. She does a lot of really jerky things and makes a lot of huge mistakes that she then has to atone for the rest of the movie. So it really is a movie about reconsidering your life choices. She doesn't get off the hook that easily.
And, the friendship between her and Maya Rudolph, between Annie and Lillian is just so believable. I found it so, you know, the best friendship. You know, neither one of them, like, if you look at a movie like Bride Wars, which it is about, you know, a wedding and two best friends, and you never, ever believe that they were ever friends. And in this movie, like, the friendship is always, like, seems really deep, and it's important to both of them. And I don't know, they both seem like really good people through it. And
that's partly established early on by having them be funny together. I just feel like this movie was such a huge blow for the funniness of women. And there's a very early scene where they are having brunch together or something, just as the Sex and the City girls always did, but like way more like real people actually have brunch. And there's some moment that Maya Rudolph's talking about a guy who once insulted Kristen Wiig by telling her she needed dental work, and then they start sticking crumbs, like chocolate cookie crumbs or something, onto their teeth so that their teeth look blacked out. It's the most ridiculous thing, but totally something that would actually happen at lunch with a funny friend. And, you know, maybe another part of what made the female centricity of this movie so satisfying, besides the fact that these were recognizable people and not kind of Sex and the City weird robot ideas of what females are, is that everyone was so normal looking. I mean, with the exception of Rose Byrne, who the whole joke is that she's kind of too perfect and too gorgeous, right? I mean, these are beautiful women. I think especially Maya Rudolph is totally gorgeous, but in a completely unusual way, right? I mean, she does not look at all like the classic bride in Hollywood romantic comedy. She's not a Kate Hudson or a Katherine Hagel, right? And yeah. Kristen Wiig, while she is blonde, is also just an odd-looking person, very, very scrawny. You know, she kind of has crow's feet. She's 37 years old. I just loved the normalcy of these women and that it wasn't a question. You know, they could still be sexually desirable. They could still be funny. They didn't have to have perfect bodies and faces and clothes.
Yeah, that's a really new thing.
There is a big character. There's a fat lady character who when she first came on the scene, played by Melissa McCarthy. She plays the groom's sister and one of the bridesmaids. And when she first came on the scene, I thought, oh no, she's going to be the butt of all these fat jokes. And she actually sort of wasn't. She was such a bizarre, funny character. It was not about her being fat. It was about her being sort of obsessed with U.S. national security. And what else was strange about her? She was just a weirdo.
Yeah, but in a really friendly way. And, like, you know, she's her fairy godmother at one point. She, like, gets her off the couch and forces
she's
her
sort
to
of butch. And then I also thought at one point, oh, there's going to be all these lesbian jokes at her expense. But it's actually, there's a point made of the fact that she's not gay. She's straight. She's just sort of like a big butch friendly weirdo.
Yeah, she just owns everything, you know, and she kind of stole the movie a little bit.
There was one moment that bothered me that I think just didn't belong in the script because it didn't make any sense. It was a moment when Kristen Wiig was complaining about all the ways in which she felt inferior to Helen, the competitive best friend figure. And one of the ones she mentioned was, she's skinnier than me. And when Kristen Wiig is saying that line, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
Because it doesn't, yeah.
She's, if anything, too scrawny.
Yeah.
And possibly even less curvy than Rose Byrne, who's sort of, you know, more classic, slender, hourglass figure or something. So anyway, I mean, it made sense to say, oh, she's richer, she's this, she's that. But when she said she's skinnier, there was something about that that struck
me wrong. I noticed that as well. I think everybody will notice that.
It definitely was something that just should have been left on the cutting room floor. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
So even though this is a very female-centric movie, there is actually one important male-female relationship in it, which is between Kristen Wiig's character and this cop, this Irish cop, played by Chris O'Dowd. Mm-hmm. I don't know who Chris O'Dowd is. Give me some background.
Well, I just know him from the British sitcom The IT Crowd, where he plays one of the IT guys for this big company. It's a hilarious show, by the way. Netflix it. And on that show, he's completely, you know, this hapless, nerdy, you know, he has really no luck with women. And so I've always thought he's really cute. And so it's awesome to see him, you know, coming to America and playing sort of not a leading man, but, you know, a love interest. And because he is and he's a great guy. He's a great actor. I mean, he's good at playing a great guy.
He's a terrific character in this, I think, also because this goes back to what I was saying before about her making real mistakes that she really has to atone for, is that there's not an artificial obstacle thrown into their relationship three quarters of the way through a movie in classic romantic comedy style, where after one loneliness montage with a song, they're back together again. She really kind of treats him badly. There's a scene where she finally does go home with him, sleep with him, and then the next morning he makes this very sweet gesture of getting all the ingredients to make a cake because he used to love her bakery back when she had a bakery. And she, you know, freaks out kind of guy style, right, at the notion of intimacy and goes running off. And she really has to pay for it. I mean, yeah. He really gives her hell the next two or three times that he sees her in the movie. I did think, actually, that the ending where they get together and he shows up at the end of the wedding was a little bit unmotivated, because the last time you saw him, he was completely pissed at her. So I don't know exactly what happened. Maybe Helen somehow, you know, pulled strings behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But he shows up all happy at the end. I wanted to know what you thought about the fact that there is a somewhat conventional romantic story, you know, plonked onto this woman-centered movie.
What I thought about that is they have to do that. It's required. Legally by law. So, I mean, you know, you can wish and wish and wish for that not to be a part of a movie, but it's always going to be.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't change the fact that this is completely, I think, a movie about women. Do you think it's a movie totally for women? This is something we were talking about on the way out. I think it's going to be a critical success and that most of my friends are going to like it. But is this going to be a box office summer smash?
I heard a lot of guys laughing in the theater, and I know other friends who've seen it. And you know, the fact that we were sort of tuned into that frequency is, you know, probably says something about it. But I heard a lot of guys laughing really hard. And I'm watching it, it's legitimately just funny to both sexes. And it, the same way, like, women like The Hangover. At least the women I know like The Hangover.
I like The Hangover okay. I thought this was a lot funner and more exciting than The Hangover. The Hangover felt like a retread to me. You know, it's interesting. I was reading some of the coverage of this that the the Vegas scene was actually cut. You know, they're on the plane to Vegas, right? All these things happen. We won't get into it now, but they never end up going to Vegas. Mm-hmm. They don't make it there because of Annie's misbehavior on the plane. And apparently Apatow wanted that taken out because he said every guy movie has gone to Vegas. Vegas has been done and we can't do it again. And I did feel like The Hangover retreaded some things that this movie studiously avoids. So the credit sequence has a little clip of a sort of music video from the wedding that I wanted to talk about because we also found that super hilarious.
So one thing that I think is a big spoiler that nobody should tell anybody about this movie before they see it is that there's a reunification of a famous pop group at the end of the movie in the wedding, and that's Wilson Phillips coming out to sing their song, Hold On for One More Day. It might be Hold On.
Parentheses.
I'm not sure. And then,
which is another of the things staged by Helen for this incredibly ridiculous, over-the-top wedding that includes fireworks and neon light-up signs and all kinds of insanity.
And the only reason Helen knows that Lillian loves Wilson Phillips is because of Annie's gift to her, which was a Wilson Phillips CD, which
right.
is like...
Well, this is an ongoing theme in the movie, right? That Annie has ideas about the wedding because she really knows Lillian, and then they get stolen and turned into these big productions by Helen, which is just so great. I absolutely love that theme.
And I was just dying with delight at the end when Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig are doing this little dance to Wilson Phillips and singing the lyrics. And, you know, it's just completely perfect and just completely true to what these characters would do. And honestly, what me and my best friend would do if that song came on in Duane Reade, you know, and I'm sure across America, people are going to... you know, be delighted by that ending.
That was nice for Maya Rudolph, too, because she kind of had to be the straight woman throughout this movie. She got some good moments, but she didn't really get to completely goof out until the end with that Wilson Phillips song. Okay, well, Lindsay, you're making me want to go see the movie again, but thank you so much for seeing Bridesmaids with me and coming in to spoil it.
Thank you so much. This was my most anticipated movie of the year, so I'm really, really happy I got to do this.
Oh, excellent. Our producer is Krishnan Vasudevan. Our executive producer is Andy Bowers. For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.